side rooms were there. So on one side room was Baba's room in the front, and we were in the hall in the center. And every day Baba would go from his room in the morning up there, and Mera Mani used to stay on the first floor. So I would be ready for Baba, and as soon as he came, then I would bow down at his feet. Yeah, at that time Baba used to allow it. But somehow nobody else was doing it. Only I was doing it. Probably being a small child. So I would do that.
You had a special permit, yes. As it were. Would he sort of come and stand for a minute?
No, he would, while he was going by, I would just come out and he would stop. Then I would bow at his feet. Uh-huh. And then he would embrace me. Uh-huh. And then go up.
So this is part of the daily routine?
Yeah, it was a part of the day.
Nice.
Daily routine.
Do you remember other?
So, one day it was my birthday. So I was in school and Baba asked my mother, what does your child like to eat? So she said, Baba, he likes plain dal and rice best. So Baba tells my mother, silly, you're trying to tell me yarns. Nobody would like plain dal and chal rice as their best dish. So she says, all right, Baba, you ask him. So Baba tells Mani, you know, when my one comes from school, see that he doesn't meet his mother, and you accost him and ask him first what he would like to have, what is his most favorite dish. So Mani catches hold of me as soon as I get in, so that my mother doesn't have time to instruct me. As if Baba thought that my mother was making up things, you know. So he would feign total ignorance. Well, not feign, but he was ignorant also, and he was all-knowing also. All both together, which we can never fathom how. But he functioned that way. And it was most natural. And that is why he was so approachable, and that is why he was so lovable, because he was on our level, as totally ignorant as we were. He was actually that, and yet all known. So it was a heady combination which would spin anybody's intellect around, you know, if they tried to understand what it all was about. So it was just unfathomable. Yes, so then Mani catches hold of me and I just said, I like plain dal rice most. So she goes and tells Baba. And he says, oh, what a insipid kid he is. So we had dal and rice for my birthday feast there. Surely you would like palau and this. My Mani would say, don't you like palau and don't you like nice, some spicy dishes? I said, no, this is my most favorite dish. And really,
it was,
yes. Plain dal rice, if you come to get the taste of it, you really want to have it every day. And that's what we do now. That is our daily evening meal, plain dal and rice and with some vegetable. But we never get tired of it. Yes, that's the beauty of it. Of simple food is that you won't get tired of it like most of the rich foods that the mind just wants to get tired of very easily.
Yeah. And life with Baba was very largely dal and rice.
Yes, yes. At that time, especially in those old days, even spices, oils, all these things were extremely restricted. Mm-hmm. And plain food was the order of the day. But very enjoyable.
Yes.
And sometimes Baba himself would serve huge servings and we had to down it.
Mm-hmm. Yes. The regular meals you would have there, would this be with Baba there as a large group, or would you eat your meals in smaller than just your family?
No, I think we used to sit all together, sometimes in our own room. Mm. It depended on where we were. If we were traveling, then it would be in a common place, or sometimes we would bring it in our plates and eat it on our little bedding rolls. Mm-hmm. Yes.
How often would Baba himself serve the food?
In the old days, he used to serve regularly. Oh. Yes. But then later on, there would be people deputed like Katie or my sister Manu, or whoever was deputed would serve it out to the mandir. Yes.
So it must have been nice to get your portion from Baba.
Oh yes, that was his prasad to us.
Could you go back and get seconds if you were so hungry?
I doubt if there would be hunger left after the big helping that Baba would serve out. So it would be a job to see that we down the whole thing.
So he gave plenty.
Oh yes. Baba was always liberal in all that he would give out.
Do you remember any other in Bangalore, any other personal things with Baba, like bowing down at his feet was one, or would you have much personal contact with Baba, or was he so busy really that there wasn't much occasion for it?
Well, most of the time he was busy with must work and all these things. There would be these everybody sessions, and I wouldn't be there. I would sit all alone by myself. Unless Baba called me, then I would go. Otherwise, mostly the everybody sessions would be on the first floor up there. And I would hear these records being played, like Begin the Begin and other Baba favorites. So I could listen to what was going up there, going on. If there was loud music, otherwise I wouldn't know what. But mostly I kept to myself. And of course studies were there.
Right.
Yeah.
But these everybody sessions, that you were as a little boy, you were not...
Sometimes he would ask me to be there, and then I would be there.
This would be among the women, though. This wouldn't be the men from the men's.
No, only the women's side. Mm-hmm. When Baba would be with the women.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, shall we...
It's 1 o'clock.
And then we'll continue after.
Very good.
Yeah.
Okay. Avatar,
Mahir Baba. Avatar, Mahir Baba ki Jai. Jai Baba.
Jai Baba. Today is June 8th, 1994. Yeah. We're sitting in Mandalay Hall at Mirzad, still bare of rugs, awaiting pilgrims next week.
Yes.
And I'm talking with Mirwan about his life with Baba and recollections of Baba. And last time, Mirwan, we had been talking about some of your memories of the times with Baba at the ashram he had established in Bangalore at the Links in 1939 to 1940. And it might be nice to resume with some of your memories of that.
I wonder if I told you the incident about Shirinmay attending the ground digging of the Universal Spiritual Center.
No, I don't think so.
No.
You mentioned some about the Universal Spiritual Center, but not anything with Shirinmay there.
Yeah, so you see, my mother had given a very beautiful sari to Baba's mother, Shirinmay. It was a very expensive thing, and Shirinmay liked it very much. So my mother presented it to her, and she had kept it for special occasions. So when this big event of the groundbreaking ceremony of Baba's Universal Spiritual Center was to take place, so Shirinmay thought it fit to bring out that prize sari and put it on. So my mother helped her to dress up, and she really looked very splendid and beautiful in that sari. Now it was getting time to go for the function. Beramangala was the place where this was to be done. It was a place quite far away from Bangalore. So everybody was getting ready. Meanwhile, Baba came along in a great hurry and says, "Mother, are you ready?" And suddenly Baba sees her all dressed up. She says, "Mother, what is this?" So Mother looked surprised. She says, "Yes, Mehrog, don't you like this sari of mine?" So Baba didn't look very pleased. He says, "No, Mother." So she says, "How come?" So he says, "Look, Mother, look what I have on me. See this torn coat?" And it was an extremely worn out old coat which Baba had been wearing, something like the kambli coat he was wearing for years. And this one also was very tattered and all having patches. He said, "I'm going in this coat, Mother. And will it look nice for you, being my mother, to be dressed up like this, like a queen? That won't look nice. But then, Mehrog, why don't you put on a good coat?" "No," he says, "I am a fakir. So, and my mother should be dressed like a like a mother of a fakir. Get out from that sari." So Mother was very cross. She says, "I know, Mehrog, you never want me to look nice and well-dressed." And she was very, very cross, really very cross. But Baba said, "No, Mother, you must get rid of this sari and put on the plainest sari that you have." So actually she did have to do that. She almost cried to do that, but Baba made her take off that sari. And my mother was very impressed about this, that Baba would not let her wear it. So that was one incident which I didn't mention previously.
So Shreemai actually would obey Baba.
Oh yes,
came down to it.
Baba would get around her in his own way, cajoling, coaxing, showing pleasure, displeasure, and somehow making her follow Baba, his instructions or his wishes, and she would obey. Yeah.
She sounds like she was quite a character and quite a presence when she was there.
Oh yes, she liked good things in life. Mm. She was very talkative, very witty, and a very lively company. Of course, there would be frictions between Baba and her. So that was the time when we had to be on the watch out, as it were, to keep away. Then another funny incident was when, I think I mentioned this about Mother wanting to get some information from Baba, and she wouldn't rely upon Baba, and she said, if this child were to say, did I mention
about
that?
The dal and rice,
you mean? No, not dal and rice.
I don't remember it, no.
Yes, so you see, once Mother wanted to know certain things that had happened in the ashram, so Baba would put her off, you know, with evasive replies. So she says, "Mehrog, call that little boy, call Mehrwan, and if he says that it is so, then I'll believe it." So when I was called in, Baba signs to me to look up to his face when replying. And Mother, of course, was so shrewd, she immediately noticed what Baba was gesturing. And she tells Mehrog, that means Baba, whom she would call Mehrog, "Mehrog, that is a small child, you know. Don't teach him to lie. It doesn't behove you as God to lie to make that young little lad speak a lie." So yes, it was a funny thing. And Baba said, "Whatever did I say that he should lie? I never said any such thing."
But she knew that Baba was going to gesture you, yeah, what you should say.
That's right. But mother was equally shrewd, you know. Yeah. Anyway, that's how they would interact with each other, and we would have these little sparks flying sometimes.
So what happened? Did she get the answers out of you?
Well, Baba would wink and I would just give something that would please Baba. Somehow I mixed up something and mother was quite sure, you know. Yeah. So that's how it would be. Then I think I must have covered most of the incidents that I recollect now after all these years. Mm. There was of course my schooling in Bangalore. Mm. Elizabeth was given the duty of taking me and Sarwar. Sarwar was the youngest child of one of Baba's Manli named Baidul. Mm. They had just joined the ashram in Bangalore.
Oh, you hadn't mentioned that last
time. Yes. So Baidul came with his family from Iran. Of course, Baidul was with Baba much earlier, but then his family was asked to come over from Iran. So Baidul left everything from Iran and brought his family along.
Means his wife and children?
Yeah, his wife's name Soltun. And his two daughters, one was the elder one known as Daulat, named Daulat, and the other younger one was Sarwar. Sarwar was slightly older than me. Mm. So we both were entered into the school there. Sarwar was a very brilliant child, and she picked up the language fast. She knew nothing but Persian before the Dari language, actually, which was a village dialect spoken in Iran, especially the Zoroastrians, a dialect which the Mohammedan population there were not able to pick up. So, sort of
private language.
Yeah. So they used to speak Dari, but she picked up English very fast. And then she was entered in the school. She went to the girls' school, girls' convent, and I went to, I think, St. Joseph's High School there. Mm-hmm. Or St. Francis, I'm not sure which, but one of the two names was there. Mm-hmm. Yes, and so Elizabeth would take us all that distance because the Lynx was quite far off from the city proper. Several miles off, so we had to be dropped there, and then she would pick us up when the school was over. Mm-hmm. And
driving you in a car. There's someone had a car there at the time for Baba's use.
Elizabeth's car.
Yeah.
Elizabeth had her own car.
She had her
own
car.
I think it was a Pontiac or something. Mm-hmm. Nice, good car. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I remember it had a horn which had a musical tone to it, and we would just press it when she would not be there and enjoy ourselves.
Yeah. Would you talk to Elizabeth at all? Did you ever get to know any of Elizabeth or any of the other farmers who were there, Western?
Not much, but when spoken to, I would speak to them, yeah. Another funny incident I am reminded of was Elizabeth was very fond of dogs. Mm. So there were two wild dogs that somehow were found and given to Elizabeth. Mm. And another good dog also named Foundy. It was an unclaimed dog, and so they named it Foundy, which later Elizabeth took all the way to America.
Really?
And yes, she was very fond of that dog. Mm. And she even brought it back when Baba called her back for some time. And eventually it died after long many years. Mm. So I remember that dog's name was Foundy. Yeah. But there were these two wild dogs called Jingo and Bingo. So and they would be tied at the foot of the staircase. Just below, they were kept there. Mm. And they would make a big ruckus all day long. So Elizabeth would come and feed them and they would be quiet for some time. Mm-hmm. But Norina never liked all those two dogs. Mm-hmm. So as soon as Elizabeth was somewhere out of sight, she would come with a big folded newspaper and start beating the dogs to keep them quiet, you know. One day suddenly Elizabeth happened to come over, and you should see the change in the tone and acting of Norina. "My sweet darling, how?" And so on, and as if she was caressing them with the paper or something. She was a good actress, I tell you. And Elizabeth never knew what she was doing with the dog in her absence. So these funny incidents would occur in the ashram. There would be these little clashes all over. And then another thing was that in Bangalore, Baba took us out for a little expedition to a place called Hassan, which was, I don't know, some 100 miles away from Bangalore or what. I'm not sure about the distance, but it was pretty far off. And we were taken there in the blue bus, and my father also was there, I remember, and he had brought another car with him. So that car had a very funny shape, you know. It had a sort of a rear trap door, which if you open, then you two people could sit there at the back side. And in the front, two people could sit. So it had the shape of a pistol, you know, a pistol. So ever since then, Baba would call my father with this sign of a pistol. Pistol.
So that was Baba's gesture for your father from then?
Yeah. He was like a pistol, you know. Fiery. So it had a very funny shape. Yeah, so I accompanied the party in my father's car with Gustadji. And the women in the blue bus, and of course Elizabeth's car was there. And I think Papa's original car, the Auburn German car, with Jalbai, it was given to Jalbai. He used to drive that car, yes. So we had been to this place called Hassan. And from there, Baba took us to several interesting old places of historical interest. And while in Hassan, I remember one little incident that it was a dark bungalow where we were staying, and there was a huge tamarind tree there, and many tamarinds had ripened and had fallen down. So Meru was there on vacation. Meru, her sister Naggu, who's now in England, and myself and Sarwar, we were the children in the ashram those days. So we used to have little games and all that. Suddenly we noticed these ripe tamarind fruit fallen on the ground. So we were tempted to taste the forbidden fruit. So we looked around us. There were no one was watching us, supposedly. But Meru, myself, Sarwar, we all had a good feast on those fallen tamarinds. They were very tasty, you know, sweet and sour, which is what children always like. Then we continued playing, you know, but somehow we came to know that we were observed eating these fruits, and that the report would be going to Baba. So we got scared, you know. So
there was a rule against this.
Yeah, I think Baba didn't like people to eat sour things. because they might have a sore throat or something, and then if they fall ill, there would be problems.
Yeah.
So generally, we were told to avoid all this. So we all said something should be said to Baba. We couldn't lie to him. So when others asked us, we said, no, no, we haven't eaten anything, because we went and gargled and took out all this the sour smell from our mouths. And then, so if Baba were to ask us, we would say, we ate a little and spat it out, or some such thing. Some vague answers we would want to give. So then, of course, Baba had us call, and Baba was in a sort of stern mood, you know. And we started to tremble, what would be the next thing. Then Baba said, we were lined up, you know. So Baba asked Sarva, did you eat the fruit? So instead of saying something, she just said, no, Baba. Then Nehru said, Baba, we ate a little. I said, yes, Baba, I ate a little, but spat out. I had spat out the seed, you know. So Baba nodded, yes. So he says, is there a stick around somewhere here? He looked around. So somebody handed him an umbrella. So Baba gave a whack to Sarva on the head. And then he said to Meru, put your hand out. So Meru got a whack. And I was had to put out my hand, and I got a whack. Then he said to Sarva, did you eat? Said, no, Baba. Another whack, another whack. Say the truth, did you eat? Then eventually she had to say, yes, Baba. So I think that was the one time I had got a whack from Baba in my whole life with him.
What happened at the end? Did he, after the whacks and after you?
Yeah, then of course we weren't called back, but we were left to, as it were, remember that Baba disapproved of our action. And of course, of our not telling him the entire truth.
Mm.
Yes. So that was one of the incidents. Then another one was when Gustavji had been given instructions not to do any work. So here was my father, myself, and Gustavji in the car. We were traveling up these mountainous regions to reach a certain monument up on the hill. And there was some miscreants had placed big boulders across the road. I still remember that. So my papa tells Gustavji, Gustavji, please get up and remove those stones. So he says, that's not my job. You know, it was Baba's order not to. Yeah, so then my father got up, got off in a huff and removed those stones. And said, good for nothing lazy people around here in the ashram, not wanting to do any work. But it never ruffled Gustavji, whatever my father said.
It didn't spoil his mood.
No, not in the least. He just put up his legs and was enjoying this scene.
He was obeying properly.
Yeah, but that is how it was. You see, how embarrassing it must have been to Gustavji to see my father get up from the steering wheel and do the job, but following Baba's instructions.
Yeah.
Not to help. That's all.
Yeah.
That's how it was.
I have the impression that Gustavji, in effect, had no work to do for a long time.
Yeah,
for many years.
But in the old days, he was in charge of the ashram. He was the manager. He had to do intense activity.
Yeah.
And then, of course, he was given the silence and no activity, which was more difficult than doing all the work in the world and being busy. But to do no work and follow his instructions is not so easy.
Yeah.
After a few days, if you are given such a thing, you would realize how difficult it is to not to do any work.
Yeah. Yeah. it sounds like Ustaji had just a wonderful temperament.
Yeah, he was a very genial person. He had a very, very genial face also.
Uh-huh.
Plump and with red cheeks and a very innocent face. And he had led a very straight and pure life with several masters who had handed him down right up to Baba. And he in his early days had undergone tremendous hardships, physical labor. So in fact, I'll tell you what could happen in our further journeys. I had more interaction with Gustaki then.
Wonderful.
Yeah. So this was our trip to Hassan. And we remember seeing Chamundi Hill, which was where the stone boulder incidents occurred. Chamundi Hill was quite a steep thing. And Chamundi is the name of the bull of Shiva, I think. So that whole hill was dedicated to Shiva's mount, as they call it. It's the bull, Chamundi.
These stones that had been put in the road, this was not anything done against Baba, was it?
No.
Just mischief makers.
Somebody had just put roadblocks there to harass tourists going up and down the hill. Yeah. It was quite a steep hill. Yeah. So then there were other places we visited, but I don't recollect. Old monuments of historical interest. So that was our trip to Hassan. It was for several days we were there. Hassan was the central place from where we went out to other places of interest.
And so Baba was there with the mandali?
With the women mandali, mostly the women mandali.
But your father went also?
Yeah. So we were there.
How did your father seem to like joining the ashram after all those years as an engineer and a man of the world?
I don't recollect much because I was not in the men's ashram.
That's right.
Yeah. When he joined the ashram, I was staying with the women's side. So I haven't many recollections about that. But there was a funny incident with my father, because this was, I don't know which year, much later probably, when my father was, I think, sent to Rangoon and other places. Baba would send him for some work of his. So he had gone to all these places. He would carry out any work that Baba would give him. And then there was one place, I think it was called Ankai, which is a hill station near Nasik. So Baba left behind Papa, Gustadji, then two or three other mandali there. And Papa was made the manager of the whole group. And it was a very difficult period for the mandali to be under Papa's management. That was the first time, I think, the mandali had a taste of the military regimen that my father would follow, you know.
He would crack the whip.
Yeah. So, after a few days, Baba went on tour or something, and these people were there. So one day, Baba receives a very long letter from Gustadji, in which he writes that Baba, here you have left us in charge of a dictator. In all my life with several perfect masters and even the avatar, I have never undergone such rigorous discipline. And if you don't call me immediately, I hereby give you a notice that I will leave everything and go away somewhere. I cannot carry on like this anymore. And then he describes the daily routine that they had to follow. They had to get up early in the morning at 2 o'clock. Yes. All had to bathe and be ready, whatever Baba's other orders were there. And then the breakfast was early morning at 4 o'clock or something. Some absurd timings were there. And then lunch was served at about 9 or 10 o'clock in the morning. At 2 o'clock there was supper, the evening meal, at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Have you ever heard any such thing in the world? Gustavji writes in that letter. And then to bed at 6 o'clock in the evening. This is how he's telling us. And if anybody protests, then he goes into tantrums and he shouts at us, "This is unbearable situation, Baba. Immediately you send for me or I am going away." So Baba had a good laugh. He had the letter read out. And then, of course, Baba called him away. And that was a very funny incident. So that's how my father would react with the mandali. Since you asked this question, I remember this very funny incident that happened.
So he wasn't a very popular ashram manager then?
No, I'm afraid not. So that is how we were brought up under his discipline, and which served Erich really in good stead. And so that's how Erich was able to follow Baba's instructions to the letter in later life.
I'm really surprised that your father would actually have the brass to do this with the men mandali.
Yeah, because Baba had made him the manager. Yeah. So he had no qualms about their being senior members of the ashram or anything. Baba's order, he just had to follow it, that's all.
Yeah.
So then no fooling around. That was it.
You know, Merman, I think I may turn on a light because we're getting a lot of
clouds.
Clouds.
So don't you want to shut this off? It's going on.
Okay, well, I'm here.
Yes, so what next?
Trips to Hassan. Anything more from that period that comes to mind?
Not that I can recollect now. I think we should make a move now.
Okay. Now, as I remember from Kitty's book, Baba stayed in Bangalore to, I think it was maybe April of 1940, something like that.
That's right. Yeah. That was the time when our school had vacation. And
that's right, summer break.
Summer break, yes. So Baba decided that we now leave Bangalore and proceed to Mehrabad. Mm-hmm. So that was the first time I accompanied the party on the blue bus journey. And of course, I wasn't always riding on the blue bus. Mainly, I would be in a car. There was the blue bus with all the women mandali, most of them. Then there was another car, another German car, Opel make, I remember, which Sarosh had sent from Ahmednagar with a driver. So myself and Gustavji were the occupants in the front seat. And at the rear was my aunt, Gulamasi, and I don't recollect who else was there with us.
So Baba wasn't in this car. Was Baba in another car?
Baba was in Elizabeth's car. I think it was the Pontiac. And with Baba was Mera, Khorshid, Mani. Yes, I think. And perhaps Naja, or may not be Naja. But that was Baba's contingent in Elizabeth's car. And then there was Jalbhai with that auburn car, if I remember rightly. And the blue bus.
So a little fleet of three cars and a blue bus.
Yes, I think so. if I remember rightly. Either two cars and the bus or three cars and the bus. And we started from Bangalore early morning. And I remember the whole links had to be emptied out, and Rano was busy packing all the luggage in the bus. Huge mounds of luggage had to be put on the top carrier, and in any and every available space inside on the racks below the seats, so that the whole bus was jam-packed. And of course with so many women traveling in it.
It's amazing the engine held out.
Yeah, it was a nice powerful Chevrolet engine. So it never gave trouble on the road. But then you will see what happens. So on the first halt, it was of course a terribly hot time to travel in April and May. I remember that. And Baba had given an order that nobody must drink water on the way. I remember that. So I don't know how such little things are there in my memory, although I was a small kid. So I would be extremely thirsty, but no water was to be taken until we reached destination.
At the end of the day, this would be?
It was in the mid-afternoon or something. We reached, I think the first halt was a small town called Shakarpa or something. I have a vague remembrance. It starts with an S. Shakarpa or something. It was blazing hot when we entered the dark bungalow. And only one glass of water had to be rationed out. And my whole throat was parched. Yeah, but my aunt was very careful not to let me drink any more than Baba's orders. But so these little orders were there.
Yeah.
Then I remember in the evening that day, Baba had everybody called, and Baba was in a sort of serious mood. And the subject was limit. I still remember that.
Limit.
Yeah. How one had to stay within a certain limit to it, and there was a limit to everything. Baba, yes. How in the worldly ways also there is a limit to the way people should behave.
Yeah.
There were people who were crossing limits, you know. So probably Baba must have given a discourse on that. It was a long, long drawn discourse. And I remember vividly the word limit. We would come back to that word fairly often. Mani was interpreting the board. And I wonder if she still remembers that.
That's interesting because I don't remember any discourse of Baba's that's been published that's on that subject.
It was an extempore thing and nobody was taking notes because Baba was in a sort of serious and stern mood. Something had upset him, I think. And he was giving out all this to the Western women and the Eastern women. Something must have occurred. So they had to be brought home. Some lessons had to be brought home.
And so when Baba was in that kind of mood, I would assume that everyone must have just listened very quietly.
Yeah. Slightest disturbance and it would be difficult for that person to face Baba then. Yeah. So these are the little things that happened. Then we proceeded on. There was a place called Shimoga, which was a nice place of historical interest. We were housed in a palatial building where I remember it was almost like a museum, you know, with rich antiques, huge vases, and somebody said that there was a prized possession of a very ancient vase wherein if you poured water into that and gave it to a dying person, he would revive for some time. Yeah. So these were the legends with some of the artifacts that were there displayed there. It was some rich person's house.
So you must have been staying there for several days anyway.
Probably about a couple of days or so. Yeah. The Baba would be doing his other work also. Mm-hmm. While the journeys were continuing, Baba's must work mm-hmm. was in full swing, you know. That was the time when Baba would never lose an opportunity to contact Mas. Mm-hmm. So probably he might have gone somewhere and contacted the Mas while the rest of us were stationed there.
I see. Yeah. And Baido was still on this?
I don't know which of the Mandali are coming, but Kakabaria was there in the bus, I remember. And Donkin was there, I remember. But I don't recollect Baidul or Eraj. They may be there, but I'm not so sure. But these two people were there because another incident reminds me that they were there. So we went on, and after that the ghats would start. The ghats means we were approaching the western ghats. These are mountainous regions. Which we had to cross to go get on to the coastline.
Oh, so you were bound for the coast?
Yeah.
For Nathurabad?
No, no. We were doing a circuitous journey to visit interesting places like Belgaum and Goa, Karwar. So these were on the coast. So so Baba had given a specific instruction to Kaka. He was the one who was sitting beside the driver in the blue bus. So Kaka was given instructions that he should keep the bus always on the road, never to take any diversions. It's a little hint Baba gave him before resuming the journey. So here we proceeded on, and our car, I think, was following the bus, whereas Baba's car would go ahead. So that was the arrangement. If something happened to the bus, we could be there to help or something. Our driver could help. So on the road, we noticed that there was a big archway made on the road. Probably some wedding procession was to pass. So it was very gaily decorated. And this arch was full of buntings and decorations. But unfortunately, it was a bit low. And as I said, our bus was loaded with luggage right on the top. So it was like a little hillock moving along, you know. So Kaka asked the driver to stop, and he went down and had a look. So he knew that if the bus passed below the arch, it would be just left in shambles. So he tells the driver, let's take a little detour and avoid going under the arch. Somehow he forgot Baba's instructions not to leave the road or go on any divergence. Forgetting what Baba said, the bus was taken down. And as soon as it left the road, it seems that he had misjudged the side of the road. It looked quite firm, but when the bus left the road, proceeded a few feet and just sank down and got stuck.
In sand or?
It was some sort of slushy ground. There might have been a thunderstorm or something, and it was very slushy and it got stuck there. Howsoever much the driver tried to raise the engine, nothing. The wheels would turn in there and there would be no movement. So here they were all stuck. Then we followed, we got stuck there. And Baba's instructions were that not to be too far behind his car. So now here we were in a quandary. So then Kaka, there were some villagers staying nearby. So they came along and they started seeing all this circus, you know, all women inside. And there was this little brother of Meru, his name was Jangu. He had recently joined ashram. And he was a small child then. And he was crying inside. And it was all hot, stuffy. So Kaka tells the women, all get down. So in, from behind the curtains, the women said, Baba's instructions not to get down from the bus until we reach destination. Kaka says, but the bus is stuck. If you don't get down, we can't move. So they reply, that's your problem, not ours. Kaka is starting to sweat now, you know. He suddenly remembered that he had overlooked Baba's little instructions not to leave the road. So then he requests the villagers, somebody of you go and get some bullock carts and help us to drag the bus out. So they were obliged by getting a couple of bullock carts, and they had these big thick ropes tied to the bus, and then the bullocks were goaded on to pull the bus. They were making all the effort, the poor animals, but the bus would not budge. Eventually, both those ropes snapped,
really?
Thick ropes, but the bus just would come up and go back into the thing. And no way the bus would move. Here the women stranded inside, Kaka sweating there, and he just probably was praying inwardly to Baba to help now. So somehow Baba must have sensed something was wrong, and he asked Elizabeth to turn around. And an hour or so later, Baba's car comes back, and Baba gets down and he asks Kaka, what happened? What is this? How is the bus there? Didn't I tell you? And Baba, then I remember Kaka crying loudly and saying, Baba, forgive me for forgetting your instructions. And he just laid himself on the floor and bowed to Baba, prostrated to Baba, and said, forgive me, Baba, it's my mistake. I forgot this order of yours. So then Baba said, all right. Then Baba tells Elizabeth to hitch her car to the front fender of the bus, and there was a small cable she had. Then, and of course he asked the women to get down in. So they all got down. And then I could see just a little tug and the bus just came up.
Okay.
Yeah.
When those thick ropes and
everything
did nothing.
No. And with that little steel cable she had, she just gave a little acceleration to the car and the bus was on the road.
Amazing.
And then Baba said, now remember, don't go off the road. Try to follow me, follow my car, and don't delay on the road. Because the journeys further was still more difficult. So Kaka said, never Baba, I'll never allow this to happen again. Forgive me and all that. So then we continue. That book, Baba's book, is under your feet. So then what happened is that we all heaved a sigh of relief and started to proceed on the journey. Little knowing what trouble was in store for us now because of this little violation of Baba's order. So as we proceeded, it became dark. And Now we just reached the start of the ghats, where the road starts to wind up on the mountain, and these are one of the most difficult ghats to negotiate. I think second only to the Bombay-Pune ghats. Yeah. So it was a very tortuous route up there, with several hairpin bends. I remember. And it suddenly became dark, you know, as we were traveling. And it was all mountainous and very thickly wooded. So the lights had to be put on. But no lights. Something had happened to the lights. So now Kaka requests the women to give their torches. Everybody had to carry a little flashlight. So Kaka is sitting on one of the front mud guards, and some other person was there, I remember. They are putting these little flashlights on the road, and the driver is negotiating these terrible hairpin bends, and you had sheer fall on one side, and here was cliff on the other. And the bus fully loaded with that little child inside, wailing and screaming because it was all dark and all stuffy, and the bus fully loaded. It was that light is flashing, I think.
Yeah. You know, I don't know how much tape is left.
But last time I think we missed out. So don't you want to change the tape?
Yeah, I think we better. I hate to interrupt you.